Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy! I heard Biden was a loser. I mean, look, Joe never got more than 1%.
And now, your hosts.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Just my mic here a little bit. How you doing, my friend?
Man, great now. Great now as always that I'm back here with you and ready to roll into some shady waters.
Yeah, well, first off, it's been a minute since we put out the last podcast episode. So as always, thank you from around the world now. For tuning in, listening to us on any of the platforms that you get your podcasts, including Pandora, Spotify, and I'm missing one, iHeart, Stitcher.
iHeartRadio.
Everywhere. Yeah.
iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher.
Yeah. So it's been
to our Hispanic audience via Evox. Oh. IVOOX.
Okay. Yeah.
Buenos dias and welcome.
Yeah. Buenas noches.
I'm not sure how the end of that should be now.
Buenos dias, buenas tardes, buenas noches.
It's almost 0-100 hours here.
Yeah, so I guess it's buenas noches for you.
But gracias.
No, buenos dias. So, está bien.
Thank you, all of you.
And, excuse me, está bien, or como estás, whatever
exactly.
You want. ¿Qué tal?
So, you know, there's the Russian contingent that... The Chinese continue, which does concern me for the well-being of the lads, but lads and lasses.
Yeah. And into the Russian element, Privyet, or was it Dobre Utra? That would be good morning, of course, but I hope you...
I don't know, but for me, it'll just be shot.
Oh, God. But,
why don't you know me a vodka?
You know, it's interesting. I work with, in any given day, in my primary workplace, I can speak Croatian... Well, this is loosely. If I could speak many languages, it would be Croatian, Russian, Spanish, Korean.
How in God's holy name did you come to learn Croat?
I work with one. So
they just sit there and make you speak.
Well, it's because in Finnish as well. So that's the next. So those languages. I've learned to be able
We're
to have...
We're not finished yet. We just started.
Duh, right. Which actually is funny. I mean, my mother's maiden name is Winquist. And so that's, I think, it's Scandinavian. I don't know where it came from specifically. Maybe Sweden or something like that. But
I was going to say either the Netherlands or Sweden.
So...
not the Netherlands is Scandinavian. They like throwing Qs in their last names.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I'm working on being minimally conversational... in those languages, and it's very interesting.
So it's a multifaceted man in the world.
Yeah, trying to be the most interesting man in the world, you know. But
you're the most interesting man on this podcast for sure.
Well, I don't know. I have, however, decided that if I could have a superpower, which I don't know if it's a superpower, but it would be to know every language fluently, including dead languages. So that would be
like Latin and Aramaic,
everything, Sanskrit,
Norse runic,
Sanskrit. Egyptian hieroglyphic, blah, 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 whatever.
But yeah, the cool thing about Norse runic is it's 26 characters, so you just swap out the alphabet. Something about dead languages appeals to me. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. In the same way I like exploring abandoned buildings.
Sure, yeah.
That sort of thing.
I subscribe to a podcast. I'm going to butcher it now, but I think it's Lexicon, and it is all about linguistics. And, you know, if I had the brain for it, you know, that would be something I find utterly fascinating. It is utterly fascinating to figure out how we got to universal words like father or dad or pops, and how the different languages sort of have these commonalities, and why languages like Finnish are the way they are, and then languages like Spanish are easier to learn because of the commonalities. It was really the geography and the broad spread nature of those languages versus...
Hey, real quick, is it John McWhorter that hosts it?
Boof.
Lexicon Valley?
Yeah, Lexicon Valley, that's it.
Yeah, it's John McWhorter from Slate?
Yes.
You dog, you!
Yeah, it's
folks, you have to forget, he's a good guy, doesn't mean to be a communist, but
he's very non-political, so but anyway, I mean, I think it's so I don't know where I was going with languages, but either way, what I do find that I think the overall message here is that I do believe after spending time in a lot of countries that when you come home to America and you deal with someone who does not speak English, you can transpose yourself into another country where, like for France, for example, not knowing French in a predominantly French-speaking country, you could be portrayed or perceived as not as smart because you're not able to speak to somebody. And I just bring that home, speaking with...
You know what, Nate? You shouldn't have to worry about that. You should have a pension, a job, healthcare, education, whatever.
All right, boomer.
Guaranteed to you upon arrival.
You're right. Wouldn't that be the right America?
Yeah, you know, but they should make damn sure you don't have any guns and that you don't have the capability of offensive. So if necessary, that you cut your tongue out.
Not okay, boomer, I should say. Okay, facetious boomer. anyway.
So ugly.
As always, thank you to all of our listeners around the world. Let's dive into tonight's topics. So on the last podcast episode, we ended with Hong Kong, and I felt that we needed to at least do some justice to that. As I said, we would. We kind of teased it a little bit, and so...
We should, but while it still exists.
Yeah. So...
In one piece, I mean.
I had mentioned before to go listen to the NPR episode on Hong Kong, and
right, it was a little tear-jerking. I got a little misty-eyed, honestly, listening to those young people.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's fascinating because we know what protesting is. I mean, we know we protest a number of things. We protest the president, maybe we protest policies, whether they're right-wing or left-wing policies. Like, we all can protest something, but when we say in America that we're protesting to protect our democracy against maybe the president, I'm just using as hypotheticals, that it's very different, and I'm not gatekeeping at all, but it's very different from the type of fight that you see in Hong Kong today to protect the democratic values that are somewhat still instilled there. And that was my take home from that episode. So there really was a generation of people there, kids really, school, you know, kids in school, undergrad, who are fighting for the continuation of democracy once China essentially can assume complete control in Hong Kong. And so the background, if you don't listen to the episode, is that these kids overwhelmingly believe that they will not be successful. But
Hold on. By successful, you don't mean making money.
No, I mean successful in keeping the competing interests of democratic values and the interests of mainland China out of Hong Kong in like 47 years. So what they largely feel collectively that they won't be successful. However, the real tearjerker moment in that episode was when they said, well, then why do you continue to fight for this? And they said, because history needs to know that we tried. And that, I think, was, I mean, I was driving in the truck, and I mean,
it was depressing.
It was depressing, but it sent...
It was inspiring, though.
It was. I mean, it was this, you know, young girl that literally said, I don't think we'll be successful, but the world needs to know we tried. It was like shivers went up my spine. Like, Jesus, that from a 22-year-old in Hong Kong talking about upholding democratic values.
Yeah, we have no clue what they're going to.
So, again, I'm not trying to gatekeep. It was just, it fundamentally switched my perspective on Hong Kong altogether.
I don't think it's just a cracks me up that we have to slap these labels on someone for being passionate and sincere. No, I don't take that. You're feeling that way is any sort of...
I guess what I would say is I don't... The point of this is I'm not disparaging someone fighting for what they believe is an attack on democratic values, because I may not agree with it. However, it's their right to protest what they think is an attack on democratic values. It's just Hong Kong is on another level.
Right. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that no reasonable person listening to your words is going to take what you said that way.
I
think it's good you put it out there. But now we obviously, you and I diverge at times on our solutions to particular problems. We very much embrace the federal system, a republic as a system of government. We certainly sympathize with what Hong Kong is going through. But I totally agree with you as we discussed. Precast. It's like attempting to explain to my nieces and nephews, however bright they are, precisely, for example, how the world changed after 9/11. Well, it's the same idea for us. You mentioned the American Civil War, and I agree. That's one with an asterisk on it, obviously, because it was fighting amongst ourselves. But the last time I feel we truly faced an existential threat was when during the War of 1812, at the beginning of the war, the English burned down the capital, Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And Napoleon Bonaparte was still running wild at that point, whereas we don't face anything like what they're facing. And obviously, it's a desperate situation that I don't want to be a naysayer, but I don't see how it can end any other way but Tiananmen 2.0, short of outside intervention.
No, and, you know, I agree with you on that. And I think to further the story here is that and I'm missing the date right now, but there's a date in decades to come where China will essentially assume full control of Hong Kong, as if they couldn't do it now, they could. But, you know, Britain gave up Hong Kong, and there was a provision that they could remain the way they were for a number of years until China took control. Well, what this generation of kids protesting, what they're protesting really is, they're the kind of lost generation where they will know what it's like to live in a place with democratic values, and that they're fully prepared.
But their children won't, you're saying?
Well, what they're fully prepared for is literally having the switch flipped to mainland China. Meaning that censorship, authoritarianship, that censorship begins. So right now in Hong Kong, you can go and freely search the same internet sites that we do from my home in Denver, Colorado. But there could easily be a flip switched, and probably if the trajectory continues, that flip will be switched in Hong Kong when China creates their one China policy and brings Hong Kong into the fold. At that point, the flip could be switched and censorship begins, and the lights effectively go out in Hong Kong. Now, it's an assumption. Will it happen? I think in terms of statistical probability, there's a high probability that could happen. And so what these people are protesting is their loss of life, their loss of their democratic values. And they will be there's a high chance that their parents at that time will either be passed away or very old, and it won't affect them the same way, that there'll be a whole generation of kids behind them who will know an increasingly encroaching China, and the sort of cultural differences between Britain, Hong Kong, and sort of an encroaching Chinese Hong Kong, and that won't matter as much to them. But it will be this generation that knows exactly what it's like and what it's like to lose it. And that's why they're fighting so hard for it.
I found your date.
What is the date?
It's in 2047.
2047, I was right. Okay. Well, you didn't hear me say it on the podcast, but precast, I said 2047.
You said it precast, and that is what counts, Nate. If the thought counts, that double
excellent.
Counts. You said it.
So, to further that, the last, you know, since I really listened to that podcast, I asked myself the question, and I'm taking some, not tooting my own horn, it's not braggadocious, but for
you're
school.
You're taking liberties with...
For school, I am taking, I'm concentrating in finance, and there's an equation in finance it's called present value of what you give up for present value of what you get, discounted price back, right? So I wondered to myself, present value get up, what give up? What would I be willing today to give up? What would be the cost that I'd be willing to give up to fight for the same democratic values? And I think it's like you said before, the last time that we really ran into this in terms of an external entity was like in 1812. And we can talk about an attack on democratic values from a president. We can talk about an attack on democratic values in Georgia for voter suppression. We can talk about all this stuff, but it
not
doesn't
quite the same thing.
It's not. It really.
They're using tear gas and German shepherds on these kids.
It is different. And what
Trump hurts our feelings. He's not threatening to put anybody in prison because they didn't, you know.
There's enough institutional
there's restraint here because of the multiple levels of government. They don't have that luxury.
Exactly. So to me, the last several weeks have sort of rested at the end of the day in reflection and reminded myself that, and not to be conspiratorial or tinfoil hat, but just to say that I would be foolish to think that it could not happen. If you can look in history, in America, that there, I would be foolish to think, even though the statistical probability is low, that I'd be foolish to ever think that it couldn't happen. And
it could.
And not even for my own values, but the values I would instill in my future children is that what would you be willing to give up today to ensure those values? And so you have to ask yourself, okay, well, right now I have a job that wouldn't stop if there was an encroachment. I've got school. I've got a number of things that I have to juggle in terms of priorities. Would I be as willing as these kids are to go literally study in the streets, as we've seen both in Hong Kong and places like Lebanon?
What are their grades like?
Probably good.
Studying in the street during riots, that's impressive.
But they are. There was the question that they thought that maybe the riots would actually slow down when the school year started, and it was just summer camp over the break, but it wasn't.
Think about the desperate lengths that have already been gone to. The People's Republic of China has allegedly already sent in hired thugs to beat these kids up at the subway, and that hasn't worked. I mean, the whole thing ironically started over extradition over an alleged murderer. That's the great irony here.
Yeah, and I think what is interesting to take home from that is that
don't be a murderer.
Yeah,
look what you caused.
That's what no one ever imagined, that would be what would be the catalyst. And truthfully,
likely murder.
Admittedly, the protests have really been fueled by the police issue in Hong Kong and sort of police, not necessarily brutality, but accountability. And
I bet their police get away with a little more than ours do.
Maybe.
I don't have any proof of that.
It's I think it's a fairly, at the time, at least in the episode, the police force prior to the protests were actually, it was a fairly admired career.
Well, I just mean in general. I bet they can.
Maybe. I don't know, though. I might disagree with you.
Let me rephrase. I wasn't thinking Hong Kong. I meant like mainland China's police. I bet they get away with more. Hong Kong, they probably don't. You're right.
That I could certainly agree with you on. But I don't think that the level
of. I didn't appropriately split the hair, Nate.
Gotcha. Well, because there's definitely a hair split there. So, so I think the take home here, close to 20 minutes into this episode, is that ask yourself what would you be willing to give up today to truly fight for democratic values? And to be honest with you, I think there could potentially be a number of listeners on this show that have real life experience in just that. I mean, we're not a domestic, we're not just a domestically listened to podcast. I mean, we do get listeners from all over the world.
28% of our audience is outside of the United States of America.
So again,
thank you again.
Yes, modstate at modstate.com or nwelline at modstate.com or nwelline, WELLEIN at outlook.com. I would love
both the email addresses in the show notes.
Okay, yep.
Both modstate ones.
Absolutely. I would gladly read your story on the show if you had something compelling. So
we have noticed the Hong Kong Chinese and the Filipino segment that is we've had a decent following to date in the Pacific, mm-hmm. as I mean, well as some of your family in New Zealand, Auckland, and it's very much appreciated. But we do keep you in our hearts, those of you in the Pacific that are going through turmoil.
And if you're listening from Hong Kong, please, we would love correspondence with you. And if you can reach out to any of those,
we will publish your story.
Yeah, 100%.
That's a promise.
Yeah, that's a promise. And you know, if you are able to hit link up with us on email, you know, we've got other ways that we can communicate past email, so it doesn't have to be quite like that. But
yeah, if you need to. Let's say you need to communicate from a more secure type situation, like with an encrypted app, you could just tell us which app. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, if we can get in touch with you from Hong Kong, I would be happy to bring you on the podcast as well. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, after that absolutely really serious segment about Hong Kong, we move to the circus. Well, I'm sure we'll have more banter back and forth on this in maybe some disagreements. However, the
you don't know me like that.
I don't know you. I think I feel like I do know you like that. But sure enough, good old Nancy Pelosi. You know what? I'm just going to let you take this.
Wait, you lost me.
Did I?
What's now?
Impeachment?
Oh gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. That. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a very much partisan vote. I know that shocks no one. I think there were a few absences, not sexually. Nobody does that in America anymore, but no, from the vote. I think there were a few people that abstained. There were only two Democrats that joined the Republicans and mm-hmm. saying, no, we don't want to open impeachment proceedings. And that's something that wisely Speaker Pelosi has underscored, made certain that everybody got numerous times, this, as well as Representative Nadler, Representative Schiff. This is not us voting to impeach the president and let the Senate take up articles for removal or a Senate trial. No, this is us saying, hey, we need to know more. We have more tools with an impeachment inquiry open, or an inquiry, as the English would say. And I think it's smart that they've there's two things that I think are stunning here, and they're especially when you compare the shades. Smart was saying, hey, we want everybody to be clear. This is an inquiry, whatever. Okay, we're not convicting the president. That's smart for them to say that, at least put on the air of fairness if it's not in reality occurring. Equal to the smartness, however, in my opinion, is the inexplicably stupid decision, with all due respect, to insist on this shit show being broadcast worldwide. To me, it's a greater risk because, yes, if you give President Trump enough rope verbally, he tends to, again, verbally twist himself into knots. Okay. However, President Trump's not going to be on trial in the House. He's not going to be there running his mouth all day to get himself into trouble. This only stands to generate sympathy for the president in the eyes of the American people by saying, oh my God, we're doing all this over transcripts that he gave us already?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple things to unpack here. And first being, I think that the vote does validate. I think that...
Smart or stupid, though? To go ahead and to emphasize, we're not trying to get rid of the president. We're just seeing what's up.
First off, caveat that this doesn't necessarily mean that I think it's smart, but I think in terms of strategy where they're
that's
at,
what I mean.
I think it's smart for them because they're delineating the fact between like voting for impeachment and taking up to the Senate and effectively saying, like, listen, this validates the basically what it is they're taking up the dare of the president. The president and the Republicans both said that this needed to go a vote, and Nancy Pelosi was like, all right, F it, we're doing it.
Let's be real, though. They, I mean, it, forget forget agreeing with the president, forget agreeing with the Republicans. That's not the point here. But I do see their point, however, of, okay, if you're going to keep throwing the I word out there, you know, you really need to open impeachment proceedings.
Which is, I agree with. Which I agree too. I think
What do you think, though, about the second point? Broadcasting it.
Well,
the proceedings will be.
It is smart. Because.
You think it is?
Yes.
You don't think it's a risk?
I don't think it's a risk. Because I think they have nothing to lose, honestly.
Other than the House?
Well, I don't think. I think they have to weigh the risk and benefit. And I think that they need public support. And I think the public support of dislike for the president, okay, work with me on this, okay? I think the public disapproval of the president overall, not necessarily the support for impeachment, would be enough.
Those are two different things. Yeah.
They go hand in hand. I think that
there is some disparity there, though.
Look at the way Democrats voted for the impeachment inquiry. That there was only two that felt that it was necessary to vote against it, and those two congressmen and women, or men, I don't know the names. What's their constituency made of? They're overwhelmingly Trump supporting, right?
He's thought the whole thing was a nothing burger from the beginning, so it wasn't really surprising. I'm pulling it up now. Go ahead.
Yeah. So there's a reason they voted that way, and I think that at the end of the day, I don't know that they're voting for an impeachment inquiry is going to really make it or break it for a lot of these folks. I mean, it's like certainly it could be used against them if they're running against a Republican in their districts. But essentially it's like, well, you know, we're going to demonize him because he voted for the impeachment inquiry. It's like, no, like you could easily come back and say, look, man, I'm just for the facts. Like just if it's going to bring the facts out, it's going to bring the facts out.
Colin Peterson of Minnesota, which is blue, but it softens towards purple in certain areas. And then there's Jeff Van Drew in New Jersey. He's the one that's basically the whole time been like, huh, what? What does it matter? You know, into it. But, well, here's the food for thought that I would throw out there as well. Like, why I'm not so certain that it is a good strategy. Because, again, I would underscore the fact that, yes, okay, technically he is on trial, or he will be on trial in the Senate if they vote to, in fact, impeach. But in practice, it is a sort of trial. For all intents and purposes, as far as the American people, how they're looking at this, they're looking at it as a trial. And remember, aside from the literal, yes, he is the one on trial, he's not going to be the one they see in the hearings on trial. What they're going to see is a lot of grandstanding by both parties, and they're going to see different witnesses either A, not cooperating, B, not showing up at all, or C, if there is dialogue, again, splitting such fine hairs, not saying they're not valid points. I'm not arguing that. You and I need to hear the facts as well. And I haven't decided yet, obviously. But what I'm getting at is this is opportunity. It's going to be opportunity after opportunity for there to be sympathy generated for the president, in my view, because he's not present, because he's not there putting his foot in his mouth.
I think it's risky. However, the reality
is particularly worth the reward.
So right now,
Is that a fair thing to say, though? You see it as risk, high reward strategy. Right,
yeah,
now
I think it's a risky.
It's worth the reward.
It's a risky investment, right? So,
but do you think it's worth it?
I think so. I think that what they're hoping is that what you've somewhat seen with some Republicans is that, and it won't matter to his base, but for some people, as the pattern. Evolve in the defense of the president, that we'll kind of go from that we'll do the Rudy Giuliani, right? Like it never happened, and then it happened, but it's not bad, and then it's bad, but it's not illegal, and then down the line, right? And so I think
you think it's progressively going to get worse.
I think what you'll find is there'll be some exhaustion in terms of as testimony comes out, as the pieces start coming together, whether it was a straight up quid pro quo or not, what you'll find is that you'll have a number of these lifetime civil servants that are coming up going like, yeah, this is what happened. And you're just shedding more light on not really positive things that are going on in the administration, in the cabinet, and in the civil service.
Let me ask you a quick question just to maybe sharpen the image here, bring us into the focus as far as your position. Do you feel with that, because I'm following, I'm tracking, but do you feel that the minutia, the splitting of the hairs that I referred to, and getting down to, again, I think it was smart optics for the president to go ahead and say, release the transcripts, even if they were partials. Point is, I think that was a smart play. Do you think that the risk here becomes getting bogged down into the weeds, so to speak, for like, okay, so he said this to the president of Ukraine about this. He's already said that he said that. You know, you see what I'm getting at?
I do, but I think as long...
Beating a dead horse, if you will.
I think as long as... If they can continue this pattern, right? If they can continue framing they're creating the narrative right now. The administration's
tweeting.
If the president remains defensive, right? I think what a lot
he's
of people
tweeting, though, feeding more into this.
It's true, but as I think for a lot of Americans,
God,
aside from the Mueller report, because this is happening at such a fast pace, I think there's a lot of Americans out there. I think they fall into two camps. Not everyone. We'll just talk about two camps. There's the first camp. There's the completely politically disinterested group.
Okay, they don't care.
Bear with me on this one. The politically disinterested group know two things. They know that the president's an asshole. Okay, but hold on. And just through brief encounters, they know that the president's going through something related to impeachment. Okay?
He's had a really busy day.
All right, so they know two things. They know that the president's an asshole, and that something along the lines of impeachment is happening. Well, it doesn't take a whole lot of assumptions to go, oh, that means he's getting kicked out of office, right? Well, without explaining the entire thing, you're like, yeah, that's what it could be. They're going to go, oh, yeah, I could see that, right? Because of the way the president is, all right? That's one camp. The second camp is the camp that sees the fast-paced nature of this impeachment proceeding. It's very public, even though a lot of it's private. It will become more public. That actually are stepping back on this one and saying, all right, well, nothing really came of the Mueller thing, but maybe something did happen in the Mueller thing. Barr is kind of seems like he's kind of working for the president, kind of not. It's kind of weird there. And the fast-paced nature of the impeachment inquiry, I think a lot of folks are sitting back and reserving a bit of judgment. And I think
that you did hit on something there. They better make it quick. Attention spans have gotten worse.
Yes.
This dragged on like the Mueller thing did. I guarantee you.
Well, and the Mueller thing at least was far more private. So we would just have to wait. And then we kind of forgot about it.
The Democrats needed, I'm not saying as far as we as a country needed this, but the Democrats really needed for Mueller to be an electrifying, charismatic, persuasive character at the hearings, which he was not.
No.
Opposite of. He's about as charismatic as this plastic container I'm looking at.
And
design. He's that way on purpose.
Exactly. So I think that there is, I mean, there's obviously a vocal minority on the right that says this, like, lay off. There's the vocal minority on the left that says this guy should go to prison for the rest of his life. And then there's a lot of, what do we call them, independent folks that really swing elections.
I think there's a bit more nuance to that portion in the middle, though. I mean, I'm sure there's a...
I don't want to generalize completely, but I think there is a bit more curiosity to the entire thing. I think
I'm sure there is.
There's
the president has done nothing to quiet it.
There's far more testimony that's available that there wasn't in the Mueller investigation.
Well, remember, we've talked about the Streisand effect. The president has really reacted strongly to something that's
shut up. If he could just shut up.
Well, yeah. Why? why are you freaking out over a nothing burger? I mean, I get it.
And that's the thing, man. That's
hearing it every day.
That I think you nailed it. For a lot of people that aren't as politically engaged as we are,
you think that, you test too much.
That, again, a lot of people are like, why is he making such a huge deal about something if it's nothing? Just be open about it.
For him, is he makes a big deal out of everything.
I know, but again, what is it that we as kids always learned about authority or government or parents? The truth will set you free, kind of thing, right? And sure. And that's such an ingrained value in American culture that I think it's hard not to look at the situation
truth?
And say the truth will set you free. And it's like, well, just do it, man. Like, if you got nothing to hide, just go for it. Like, I don't understand. But then, you know, obviously there's a whole lot of issues with liberty and invasion of privacy, et cetera.
Well,
but
there's a massive issue with, you know, I don't know, Americans under 40 and being able to actually, I don't know, face the truth. But I see where you're going with that. I mean,
so again,
you're such a kind person.
I know. Now I will move to something that I think I sort of have a problem with in terms of the validity of the impeachment inquiry. And I was trying to figure out strategy-wise, legality-wise, and the validity of the impeachment inquiry, like how this would work. But it kind of soured the taste of this for me. And that is after one of the provisions in the inquiry essentially was that it essentially gave Adam Schiff a lot of authority.
Yeah, I'm not real crazy about the closed door stuff.
And effectively what that means, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like Adam Schiff essentially has the authority to allow, or so essentially if you're the Republican Party and you're like, man, I want to bring this witness up. This witness discounts.
They can't without his approval.
They can't without his approval. And if he doesn't do it.
I don't know how the impeachment inquiry changes the rules, because I know that does broaden the power of the minority.
I hope so. And I haven't dug that deep into it. I just know
that was concerning, though. No, you're right.
And it just was, because to me,
it's anti-democratic.
It seems like it gives one man a whole lot of power to shape a narrative that in whatever. Like, let's just say I didn't care. Let's just say.
Regardless of whether we think somebody's a jerk or not,
we're supposed to believe in the right to a
fair trial in this country.
Yeah, what it comes down to me, and he'll have no part in the trial necessarily in the Senate that goes to that. But to me, it's like, listen, if you are truly principled, you truly think that the president did something illegal.
Then you don't need to cheat to get in.
Let's say you did find the smoking gun, right? Let's say the full transcript came out and the president clearly said, I want you to do this and I'll release
the president said, you better investigate him or I'm going to burn Ukraine down.
You know, let's say something like that did happen. Again, if Adam Schiff, if that provision wasn't there to give Adam Schiff that power, I think there would be more validity to the entire thing. But again, if you give one person that much authority over an investigation and can craft it in a specific way, even if you have that smoking gun, the validity of the entire inquiry is still in question. And if you're really trying to garner public support for the impeachment of the president, discounting the validity of the entire investigation with something as obvious as that is really going to turn a lot of people off.
Because it brings up, I mean, notice one thing that we heard very early on, and I was able to elaborate on a little bit of it because of my acquaintance with the author of The Real Watergate Scandal, but conspiracy, Mr. Jeff Shepard. But he found it odd when he was joined by John Dean, even though he can't practice law anymore, but it was a group affiliated with him. There's a bunch of people on the left that were pushing for the unsealing of the, quote, Nixon roadmap. Remember that? About 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this?
Yeah.
Well, you've noticed, right, how the Nixon roadmap just doesn't seem to be of interest to the Democrats anymore? You don't hear about it.
No.
And little tale of the tape here is because, and again, Mr. Shepard had prepped me for this. I just didn't realize it was going to be that extreme of a... He said, well, watch how quickly they dropped this. He said, because they didn't realize what they had. he knew this because of the book, and I encourage everyone to read The Real Watergate Conspiracy by Jeff Shepard, because if nothing else, I get it. You've read 8,300 books, and they're all negative on Nixon. Well, you could, since you're so convinced he's evil, read one book in his defense by somebody that was there. It wouldn't kill you. But he made the point, Mr. Shepard did, that in reality, what it shows is a roadmap for things like the ex parte meetings with Judge Sirica, which ex parte, folks, is when the judge meets with either the prosecutors or it could be either camp without the other camp present, because you're supposed to, as a judge, meet with the prosecution and the defense or whatever the arrangement, if it's not criminal, whatever, both sets of attorneys. What Judge Sirica was doing and the committee opposite, the Irvine committee, was doing was they were meeting with prosecutors, and for instance, Judge Sirica told them, he said, look, when the Nixon defense argues this way, then this is how you need to argue against the objection. Like basically telling them, and hey, then I could side with you then. And I say all that to say, so this Nixon roadmap that was just lusted after by the Trump opposition suddenly went away because they realized, holy shit, this is not legal. And I think it's fascinating going, so if Richard Nixon was that evil, why'd you have to cheat to get him? And I think that kind of feeds back into what you were saying here. It doesn't look good when you, even though you're so convinced, the proverbial you here is so convinced that President Trump is guilty, or well, why are you not allowing his defense to call any witnesses?
Yeah.
It seems to me if he's that guilty, it wouldn't matter who he called up. But anyway, I just put that caveat in there. I can just how quickly the Nixon roadmap did disappear. Mr. Shepard was right. And it's kind of funny to see now. It's not funny. It's sad to me, because if the president has conducted himself in a way that constitutes a miscarriage of his office, high crimes and misdemeanors, and must be removed, it's sad to me that the process for it to be colored that way, if it makes sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's all very interesting. And again, more to be seen. I think the real update here was that they have moved. We'll effectively see this more public as it moves on, and we'll see if the strategy pans out. So, well, hey, my friend, we're at about 45 minutes. And,
real quick.
Go ahead.
Do you think your friend Jeff Sessions is going to run for Senate?
Oof. Yeah, I think so.
Will he?
Yes.
Beat Doug Jones? Who? Doug Jones?
Yes, he will beat Doug Jones.
Hey, you know, everybody loves a Mike Jones reference. Next week, it's going to be Soulja Boy. Tell him.
God.
It's going to be, yeah. Woo! Roll. Well,
anyway, it's always an honor and a privilege to do this with you, my friend. And, you know, I look forward to the next one and our subsequent conversation. So until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.